CosmicRadio.tv.
This podcast would be nothing without our patrons, so special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Welcome to a fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Villegas. Joining me today, hip-hop artist extraordinaire, Mr. Miranda.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Sorry, it broke out as you were just saying. You're as I just like teed up the perfect thing, just like...
Of course, right?
That's how it goes.
How you doing, Rob? Thanks for having me on, man.
Dude, thank you for being on. It's funny because, like, you know, it only feels like a week we talked to each other. It only feels like just 7 or 8 days ago that we're across the ocean on a island, you know, right there right near South Korea and China. We're just hanging
out. Exactly. It actually feels like yesterday we were just doing this.
I'm about to say that. Well, that's what I was going to jokingly say that, but it does feel like yesterday because, like, you know, and for those who don't know, you can kind of set the stage a bit. When I went to Japan as part of, you know, all the stuff like that, I was going to some Square Sound stuff, and I mentioned in last week's episode all the stuff. One of the people that came with Raheem with Megaran was Mr. Miranda here. I think for the most part, until I had left for Osaka, like, we hung out pretty much on any given day someplace.
Yes. Various. I mean, I was counting last day there, you know, I was asking Raheem, I was just like, you know, what are all of the two, you know, like, he's in my, you know, like, it's like, we were everywhere. That's why I think even though it was only 7 days, it felt like it was a month because of everything we did within that small time frame.
Well, you guys did so much. I mean, we all did our equal parts of our stuff. Like, I mean, granted, I went to Osaka and then went to Hiroshima and things like that. But you guys, like,
yes.
you did some stuff well after that for me. Like, you got, like, when I left and then you guys went to, like, you know, Disney Tokyo, you hung out with Inafune,
yeah.
You went to Tokyo Game Show. I got Japan. You guys got like Tokyo hardcore though.
That was pretty amazing. You know, I mean, it was so interesting just to be able to see all this stuff. I mean, I haven't been to Disneyland in years, period. I mean, in the States, let alone in Tokyo. So That was pretty cool, you know, going on the It's a Small World and hearing it in Japanese. So.
See, like that, I think I would shoot myself. Like It's a Small World is that ride that I, you know, I can sing the words. You know, it's a world of laughter. It's a world of fun. I mean, I like what It's a Small World stands for. I love what the song sentiment is. I think I would shoot myself though if I had to hear it in any other language like more than 3 times. Like, I would just, you know, just
It's one of those situations where, you know, you definitely wouldn't want to be trapped inside there.
Well, because there's that story, and I brought it up. I think I brought it up again. There's that story of, like, I think some, like, paraplegic or someone, like, gets, like, stuck in the ride and they couldn't move it or something, and he was on, like, on loop for like an hour or something like that. Some crazy thing where he gets stuck and It's a Small World. And that man, I think he couldn't move.
Wow.
He couldn't, like, some, there's a story for it. I'll have to look it up again, 'cause I've said I brought it before, but like he was like stuck on the ride for like a good hour or something. Some length of time that when you hear it, you're like, you had to hear It's a Small World for that long. And you're still sane, you know? And I think it's just because he couldn't kill himself because he's like, he's paraplegic or something.
Right.
He couldn't move. But it's just like, he was like, jam the ear canal that farther because I like It's a Small World, but if it's like It's a World of Laughter, like 2 hours in, just like, you know, this is the only way out. Fine. I can't swim.
Exactly.
Here. It's like, I can't move. Well, this is it. This is where I end it. And I don't know, you know, and then you have to explain to your, you know, then your relatives have to explain, well, how did he die? Well, he was stuck on It's a Small World for 3 hours. Yeah. And the only relief was, and releasing himself of this mortal coil was his only relief. And it's like, oh, okay. No, but going back to me, but being serious a bit, we should probably talk a little bit about the trip, because we'd kind of, we'll talk a little bit about more Miranda, stuff like that, in terms of hip-hop and all that, but I always want to bring the trip up, because we, you know, it was definitely like the way we kind of got introduced. Like, we had, I almost want to believe we probably have seen each other in Austin when you performed, but, you know, not in any kind of extended, you know, time. Just, you know, this is our first kind of time, because, like, you guys had arrived, like, we had already been there. I got to have been there a day. You guys arrived, like, on a Thursday and completely, you know, jet-lagged and such. I think we literally ate at a ramen place that was outside of your hostel, if I'm not mistaken. I think.
Yes, we did. That was the first spot that we ate at. It was right there. I mean, I don't even know what the name of the place was.
No, neither do I. I'd have to look it up on the map and even to remotely get an idea. But it was, I remember we'd gone there cause it's like, well, let's eat something. And he's like, hey, look, there's ramen. Let's go in here. And that was all the lead up it took. It was just like, we're here, food, cool. And it was just such
because
it was such a funny thing, you know, cause this is much like me, this is your first time in Japan. So I know we kind of talked about it last week, but let's kind of go in a little bit more depth. How the hell did you get, you know, when Raheem, you know, Mega Ran, however you want to call the man, approached you, say, hey, do you want to go to Japan? Like, did you think it was a real thing? Like, obviously you thought it was a real thing, but did you ever consider that would happen?
I mean, we had talked about it when he went last year, and it just didn't happen. You know, I was gonna try to do a Kickstarter to, you know, to try to see if we can financially. It just didn't happen. So the idea was definitely there. So I knew it was gonna happen. It just was a matter of when. And this time, you know, the way God planned everything. I mean, it worked in my favor. And so,
Because it was such a weird thing. Because again, I remember Rand told me he was going, but he'd tell me he was bringing, you know, I mean, I always think he's going to bring some sort of crew, but like the crew to me in my brain is like you and a DJ, not like I'm going to bring myself, two other acts. And not only are we going to have, you know, this chiptunes thing that I'm doing, and they're going to come up on stage with me for a few songs, so to speak, but we're going to do our own thing in Yokohama. You know, in this random, you know, rap bar, if you will, there. Like, was that always a plan for, like, you guys to perform your own kind of solo thing? Or was it just sort of, like, that kind of
game? Yeah.
Okay.
No, yeah, that was... And the reason being behind that, though, is because the Yokohama Connect was because of the fact that both were with the same independent label out there called River City Records.
Right.
They had been wanting... He's been out there through them already before. They had been trying to get me out since 2010. That's where that connection came through.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, because I remember you guys had, you know, and we talked about, you know, you've talked about this some often, and we talked about it last week, but I mean, you have an album there. It's distributed there at Tower Records and, you know, in the store and stuff like that. And so I knew, I learned about that connection because it's always weird for me to see, not saying in a bad way of like, you know, who's going to come, like I'll see Rand bring people stateside, but it's a lot easier to bring people stateside because it's a lot harder to say, hey, do you want to drop $1,600, $1,500 on a ticket to fly to a country where it may or may not work out in terms of performance for you? You know, it's hard to sell, I think.
Because
much you mentioned, you know, finance, you know, last time you tried to do it, just finances just weren't in sync. And now this time they were, which, you know, it isn't a cheap, it's not a hard trip to save up money for, but isn't a cheap trip. And
exactly.
No matter what.
The way I looked at it was just, I'm not necessarily saying that it was kind of like a now or never thing, but I was just like, you know, I'm here. I've been trying to go out here for 6 years now. the time just feels right. I have the money, you know, I'm able to actually make it happen. Like, let's just do it. So.
Yeah. And I think the coolest thing, cause we, you know, when we went to the Yokohama show, cause that was your first performance in Japan. Well, you know, you mentioned the show last week wasn't your first performance ever. We'll kind of talk about that in a second. But it was sort of your first performance right. in Japan. And it was such a weird thing for me. Cause like that venue, it was, I think I forgot what the place was called. It was
Crib.
The Crib. That's right. It was a weird name like that. The funny thing is like, that's the kind of bars like I tend to hang out in. Like those very kind of small.
Oh, my, me too. Uh-huh.
You know, whenever I go to shows here in Austin, like typically they're in those like weird hole in the walls kind of places. It felt like a weird hole in the wall in a good way. I mean, even like the point before the movie kicked off, you know, when we went to eat, they were playing, before the show kicked off, they were playing Straight Outta Compton.
Straight Outta Compton.
Which is, again, just like a weird thing of like, this is awesome. We were here at, you know, here at the place and we're fucking that. But it was such a cool thing because, you know, I wasn't sure what the night, like, were you told everything that was gonna happen that night, like from like rap battle to you guys performing? Because like that was a surprise to me, like, well, the idea of the rap battle.
Right. Well, I saw it on a flyer for the show, for the event, you know, the like the event flyer, and I saw that it just said rap battle, you know. So I mean, but I didn't really necessarily know. And then I'm seeing Straight Outta Compton showing, and yeah, I don't know what to expect.
Yeah, now, that's sort of what came through my mind, because like I had been to a hip hop show before stateside, and as you know, I'm a nerdy, you know, Hispanic kid. I'm already feeling completely out of my element at hip hop shows, but fuck it. But here I am in Japan, of all places, at a hip hop show. I don't know what's gonna happen. I don't know what crazy characters are going to come out and, you know, I'll just leave it at lo and behold, there were some crazy characters that came out, but we'll just leave it at that. I don't want to talk, you know, that story that there are certain stories that will stay in Japan. That is one of the stories that will stay in Japan and it'll never, ever leave.
Absolutely.
You had
10 steps ahead of you.
Let's just say you had to be there. But that being said, like, I didn't know what to expect when it came to, you know, a Japanese rap battle and I almost wished I knew Japanese better, because like you could tell from the I can tell it's good, but I'm forgiving. Like, but seeing sort of my artist friends like you like being impressed with them, that was kind of cool.
Yeah, like I just felt like, oh man, like this you know, he just sounded so passionate about it. Like this, he must have just been going in right now. You know, but it's like, I don't know what he's saying. And it was like, damn it, you know?
Right. Cause it sucked, because you saw these characters. I say characters because I don't remember any of their names. I feel horrible. But you saw these characters and this one guy, and I don't know what his name was, but I know he had a hat on and he looked like, you know, he for lack of better words, he looked like a hip hop artist. I say that as, you know,
he was the kid that was sitting upstairs, right?
Right, exactly. And apparently, like, you had noticed him, like he was like studying, like he was like reading things. And even after the show was over, like he went back upstairs and sort of zoned out, even during like the real shows and everything else. Like, he kind of concentrated on what he was doing. Like he was there to prove something. And I was like, that's really cool.
Serious,
yeah.
Absolutely.
And it was just cool, because, you know, we saw this sort of opening thing, and then you know, then comes your, like, because I remember you and I were talking, and I think it was you, and I was talking to Doug and everything else, and Doug was like, maybe I won't do that, you know, he's trying to think of his set to do, and it's like, yeah, I have this song where I do this with whoever, like, you know, about like Macho Man Randy Savage, like, maybe I shouldn't do that one here because maybe they won't get it, and even you were kind of, not saying you weren't nervous of performing at all, even you weren't sure what was going to land in terms of language barriers.
Exactly. Cause for the simple fact that I do a lot of call and response. And so I didn't necessarily know if they were going to understand what I'm calling out to get the response back. So, yeah.
And again, it was interesting to see all that. Cause even before you guys, there was an opening act of this guy named Mossberg was his name, or yeah. Cause Mossberg's
right.
The hamburger chain, and Mossberg was his name. And it was him.
Right.
And I will just say lady friend.
I forgot the female's name.
I don't either. I forgot her name too, but she was like, her voice was amazing.
She was brilliant.
You know? And so, you know, there was that act that happened, and it was just, again, it was a surreal night, because even before he kicked off, they did this like passing of the microphone, if you will. And I say that being like everyone got in, Mossberg got in, everyone did. They even gave it to Raheem at one point. I think Raheem gave it to Doug, and even Doug chimed in. It was just like this weird thing is I never, you know, whenever I see, you know, shows, it's never like, let me pass the mic around and see who kind of comes into the mix. I think at one point they're offering the mic to me. I go like, I don't freaking rap. I'm a nerdcore guy here. Don't you dare hand me that mic. It's going to just be fall flat on the, I'm going to fall flat on my face. And then some.
Right.
It's like, I don't belong. Well, you know, that... Go for it.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm done.
Oh, okay. No, I was just going to say, basically what it was a cipher. That's what they call it. So it was everybody, you know, they were having a cipher, and normally like, I'm practically the first to grab the mic, but I was so zoned out for this moment that I'm just going to wait till it's literally my turn to perform, you know?
Well, cause it was such a, for you, you know, and I'll lead it up to this, you know, when we got there, you know, the day prior, and we talked about this, you know, last week, and you know, there's video evidence, there's photo evidence, everything else. But like a day prior, we're in Tokyo. I think we had went to Shibuya by that point in time, and we had gone to we're just walking around Shibuya because we're just going to the crossing or something like that. It was before the show. It was definitely before the show because I remember I had brought the album, started to get some stuff signed, and we had gone, you know, just on a lark. We were walking around. It's like, hey, look, there's a Tower Records. And you guys mentioned, hey, you know what? I think my album's there. You know, I think all my stuff's there. And just on a lark, let's go see what happens. Let's see what's up. And lo and behold, you know, we walk in and we go to the hip hop section, and there's your name.
Right.
So
yeah, I mean, that was just,
explain the emotion that went through your head. I you know, explain, give your side of the story. I've told you what I saw. I'm not curious what you.
Right. Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, the crazy part about it is that I wouldn't have even thought about, you know, the whole Tower Records situation had we not seen the one that we saw. I remember that specifically seeing the album online, had it digitally through Tower. Wouldn't have even clicked. I mean, I literally wouldn't have even thought about it. I'm just thinking, okay, well, I'm going to get a chance to meet the individuals from the label, and, you know, we're going to be able to talk and everything. So that's what basically, you know, was on my concern. But I wasn't even going to think about Tower Records until we saw it. Actual Tower Records. I'm like, wait a minute, and I'm, you know, like, this is, we got to try it now. What's the worst that can happen? It's not in there, right. You know. So right. I was just like, we got to try it out.
And it was just such a weird thing because, like, we walk in there, you know, I end up buying a whole bunch of stuff in general, you know, just because I'm like, well, I'm here and I see all these video game soundtracks. I guess it's time to drop some change, just because where else?
Yeah.
And I dropped a lot of change just on you know, in general, in CDs alone.
Oh yeah. You spent a good amount.
I spent a good amount, but what was interesting was that we went there and it wasn't like it wasn't a mission. It wasn't like our only mission was let's get the picture of the dog crossing. And then you saw it in the distance. You're like, well, I think I have a CD there. And then Rand's like, I think I have one there too. I'm like, let's. Again, like you said, what's the worst could happen? It's not there. Who cares? We fucking walked the Tower Records. You know, not like we had anything planned. You know, we had the night was completely blank.
And it's the fact that we're just like seeing a Tower Records, period. You know, so
yeah, because like you have sort of it's both of us grew up in the era of buying music in stores. I've tended to leave that era behind as quickly as possible because I buy everything digitally. But like for you, that was like your big music. I mean, for me too. But like I think about that. But when we got there, and this is where I found it so fascinating is that when you know, and I know that you had found it a split second before we saw it. So I'm curious what was going through your head, like as you're looking through all these artists there in the hip hop section, and then lo and behold, your name pops up.
I mean, I almost felt You know, I mean, I almost felt paralyzed. You know, it was like when you're just in so much shock that you just, you know, I mean, there were so many different emotions, you know. I had put on Facebook, you know, that whole situation about my grandmother, you know, and the whole Tower Records situation and the memory that I had from being a kid and literally her compact disc, my actual first CD. Just something that I always wanted to have was an album of mine in there. Never happened in the States. I had that memory as well. And, you know, that emotion was going through me. And then it was like, okay, wow, I'm in, and it's right here in front of me. So it was just a range of emotions that caught me where I literally felt paralyzed. I just was in so much shock, but it was joy, you know, and it just felt great, you know. And then that's when, you know, and that's when you guys walked up and, you know, I mean, you know, my facial expression didn't, you know, couldn't paint in a better picture for you.
Because I remember the funny story actually wasn't even the emotion, but was when you went to go buy the CD and you're trying to communicate to the cashier, like, that's me.
Oh yeah.
And she's like, sorry, what are you saying? America Jean got, you know, America Jean.
I mean, like, I'm the one first.
You know? Like you try to point, like, no, you see this? This is me. And she's like,
right.
Because I think the funny, exactly. I think the funniest, like, really honestly, out of all the gags that happened where people, like, people even remotely, you know, cared about who you were, I say that not in a bad way, but just in like that, just because, again, we're in another country, who knows who the hell is going to care about it.
Yeah.
Not, you know, it's not like any of us are getting like, oh, look, you know, it's not like I'm being recognized in any capacity. I'm just among,
right.
among these like other Americans who are just happen to be artists who may or may not be ever recognized just because of the sake of the world. But yeah, we're in Odaiba, you know, in literally this place called MJ Land, in this sort of
MJ Land, yeah,
which is the greatest thing ever. I love, and there's a video of this that I think either you posted it, Raheem, or Doug posted it. One of you three did, where it's like you and the clerk. I don't even know, like, how did it come up that you were like an artist? Like where did this? Because like you were like by the end of that, like signing CDs and giving away stuff or something.
Oh, I know it. Giving away.
Well, because it was such a weird, it was so weird to see that like moment happen where, you know, you were there. Because like we had gone to that neck of the woods to go visit the giant Gundam statue, the life-size uh-huh. Gundam, which is, you know, ready to, you know, defend Tokyo, you know, Neo Tokyo, whenever the forces of evil come to destroy us. And hopefully the world at that point in time, because I do believe it's a real working.
I want that to be our next means of transportation when we go out there.
it's a real Gundam. I don't care what anyone says. That thing is working. And you know, come the Olympics 2020, when things go down, if things go down, that Gundam is armed and pretty dangerous, in my opinion. But definitely. That being said, like, we went there for that reason. And then, you know, Rand takes us over this other section of the mall, if you will. This other side mall or whatever, because there's like Odaiba sort of this man-made island, and it's been around for a while. It's actually where they had like some barracks like years ago, you know, defending against the invading forces of the English and stuff like that. You can look at history for all that information there. So we're on this other side of the island, you know, the mall structure there, and it's like this thing out of like the 70s or 80s, like just feels like bizarre and weird and strange. And it was like, this is amazing. Why didn't we come here first? And then we end up again going to this place called MJ, you know, MJ Land, and it was just such a funny thing of just like seeing. I think they had like a replica of the Thriller jacket. They had, you know, all these different kind of DVDs and music videos. Just seeing you, Doug, and as you guys are cashing out, buying your stuff for various people, and just somehow while I walked away trying to find my friend Claudia and trying to guide her over there, you guys start like signing autographs and like, no, yeah, we're doing a show tonight or something. And just like, what the hell?
Right. Because she was like, you are American music? And once I said that, I mean, she just lost it. Like, it was just.
And then she was like.
She was telling us about Elvis Costello. Remember, she was like, Elvis Costello just came in here and they had his picture up on the wall.
That's right.
Picture. And she was like, we're going to put your picture up right here below his. I was like, wow.
It's like, I don't like, this is the only place in the world that my picture, that me and Elvis Costello will ever get mentioned in the same sentence in any capacity.
Exactly, right? Yeah, exactly.
Not even like, oh yeah, we have Elvis Costello and look, Mr. Miranda. It's just like, why? Right. Who's this guy? Yeah, I know who Elvis Costello
is. That just wouldn't happen.
Well, because the other funny part was, didn't she didn't she say she was like looking for American boyfriend or something at one point?
Yes. Oh God, that was classic. Yeah, she was a. I need boyfriend.
Yeah, that's what it was. That's what it was. I need boyfriend. I was just like, so it was like, so adorable. I mean, it was awesome. It was fun. Like, don't get wrong. It was just so adorable. Just like, I need boyfriend. Just like, how do you respond to that?
Yeah. The whole script got flipped after that.
Oh, it was so funny. It was such a funny moment because it was just such a weird thing. So the last thing I'll talk about before we kind of get back, we got to talk about how the hell you got to where you are as a hip-hop artist. But I do want to ask this question. This is the last thing of Japan, because even though Japan will probably come up just happenstance. What do you think of chiptunes? Because was this your first like chiptunes thing you had been to in terms of like as the central focus for the music?
For the main focus, yes. I mean, you know, being at South By, you know, being with Ran and stuff, you know, I've encountered it before, you know, and I mean, I'm very familiar with it, but that was like my first actual, I mean, because that's literally what the off of. So that was different for me. Really enjoyed it. And I remember that it really kind of reminds me.
Yeah.
You know, these guys deserve, you know, they deserve a chance, you know, they deserve to be heard. I don't see why these, you know, but at the same time, blow up, you know, they're happy with what it is for what they're doing. I just, in my head, I was like, God, these guys should be millionaires. You know,
it's hard. And for those who, you know, we had a little bit of a glitch, but for those who have no idea, and the only reason I know this, because we talked about this at the show, what Miranda was saying was basically the chiptunes, if you hear it live, has very similar correlations, if almost not one-to-one, to a format known as EDM, or electronic digital music, dance music. Basically, mm-hmm. the stuff you tend to hear at clubs. Whenever you hear that, you know, all these, anything played at a club, if you would just take those same exact notes and place in a Nintendo or a Game Boy doing those sort of things, you'd have chiptunes at a very, very base level. It's such a weird thing to hear that out of you, only because like I always thought whenever I heard EDM was like, well, this is just chiptunes. There's nothing different, you know. There's no reason this shouldn't be playing. You know, chiptunes shouldn't be playing the club. You know, there's no reason this shouldn't be there. And hearing somebody else validate, you know, say that, you know, because again, I'm knee deep in this stuff. Like I'm at a point where I'm like, I recognize chiptunes. I'm excited to see Chipzol and all these kind of artists are performing.
Oh yeah.
But to hear when I got to meet, you know, the guy from YMCK, I lost my shit. So I'm like, you know, I'm knee deep in this stuff. This is my genre. But hearing somebody on the outside sort of say the exact same thing I thought, it was like, okay, cool. That means I feel a bit more confident in sort of my understanding of this music genre and how to kind of pitch it to people, because there's no reason it shouldn't be bigger. I can see why no one wants it to blow up, just because it's such a, we talk about nerdcore and stuff like that. It's such a niche music type, not even just say like, you know, not just simply like, oh, it's music made on, you know, that's for video game, you know, video game sounding. It's like, no, this is music made on video game hardware, or, you know, and it's typically made on like Genesis's or Nintendo's or Game Boys, and that's not
right.
That's not uncommon to me. And you hear it, it's like, this is just EDM, you know, in its very basic form. You know, you just, and I'd say that just as a kind of thing, like you hear Chipzol and you hear like, you know, her set is just like, this is that. Or even where we're there, we heard, you know, Toriana, just like there's no reason that shouldn't be playing stateside clubs. There's no reason.
Exactly.
So let's kind of go back in time, because we got to set the stage up as to how the hell Miranda got here. You know, we talked about all the cool adventures we had in Japan. That was fun. But obviously,
right,
Miranda, you know, Miranda didn't just, you know, pop out of the scene, you know, and start performing, you know, last year and became what he is now. So I got to ask.
Right, no.
What got you into hip-hop in the first place?
Oh, man. I fell in love with it when I was a kid. 2 years old, to be exact. I just remember seeing Rakim and you know, Run DMC and, gosh, I mean, just numerous acts. I mean, Big Daddy, these guys, and Biz Markie and stuff. And this went on a couple years later, you know, I was introduced to me being in Arizona, you know, it's like California is just a hop, skip, and a jump. So it's towards West Coast hip hop as well. You know, just the, it was just the, you know, I love the fact that, you know, there was really was no discussion about it. It's just, it's something where it's just a, it's a, it has a universal appeal, you know, and it's an open, it's an equal opportunity employment, you know, it's like anybody can do it. And I just felt it was, I just fell in love with it. You know, it was something that, I really enjoyed listening to, you know, that's me being a kid. When I was 13 years old, my Uncle Mario, he's my my mother's baby brother. He's a musician as well, and he plays the bass guitar. His aunt, they have a band, and my aunt is, and he had a little one bedroom apartment at the time and stuff. And so, I was going to be exact, and I recorded back then they were called pause tapes. I mean, they're mixtapes now, you know, but it's because they were actual cassettes, you know. One, and I just, you know, was recording over like popular instrumentals and stuff like that. And it was just something I did just for like some people at school, like some classmates and some people in my neighborhood and things like that. It wasn't something that I was taking like serious. I just thought it was fun, it was like an experiment. Fast forward time. 6 years after that, I was 19, and when I got in an actual studio, like a legit studio,
right?
Music, you know. And so, I mean, it stemmed from being a kid, you know, 6 years old, and just loving the culture, you know, loving what it was about. 19, really like wanting to pursue it.
Wow. Okay. See, it's interesting always hearing how people get to where they are, because I always hear different stories, and usually when it comes to musicians, like one of the common threads I hear is it's always a family member that gets them into it. It's always a family member that exists. Like we talked Kyle, K Murdoch, like his father, I forget what relative was, might have his uncle too, was like a radio performer, things like that. And hearing you
right,
mention, like,
right.
It always seems like there's always somebody that is your nexus into music, like that becomes sort of your introduction to it.
Right.
So obviously you got in the studio, you know, later on in life, you were a kid. But we all have sort of inspirations and stuff like that. And not all of them are the exact genre that we perform in, or, you know, like if I think of like my, you know, musical inspirations, even though I'm a podcaster, you know, it varies from video game music to, you know, rock and electronica and techno and things like that. Who were your inspirations to kind of kick into everything? You know, like especially when you came to channeling music, whenever you're performing, you know, whenever you're trying to record something, there's certain inspirations you've had over your life. Who are those musically?
Well, my uncle was definitely one of them. He's actually the one who just got me into music, period. I grew up with my grandparents, and baby of all of his three other siblings. He was still like a late teenager. I mean, I think he was probably about 17, 18 years old at the time. At the house, so I would encounter him just, you know, playing his guitar. You know, I'd get the chance to witness it. Prince was his idol. Try to emulate Prince as much as possible, as far as not as far as his lifestyle, but just as far as his talent.
Well, it's funny that even though Prince is someone entirely different, that kind of explains a little bit, because I was, you know, before the interview began, I started looking through your discography on Bandcamp, and there's a lot of Rick James in your sort of discography and mentioned, at least on Bandcamp, there is.
I had a dedication EP to Rick James back in 2000. Gosh, what did I want to say? But that's all going back to my Uncle Mario. You know, he was the one who got me into that. That was my kind of influence. ranges. I mean, as far as my taste, it just, it ranges. It's not, not consider myself to just be, you know, stuck in any kind of box. I mean, because of the fact that I listen to hip hop in general, like, I mean, I listen to classic rock music. I mean, soul music, you name it, you know, so 80s pop, you know, I mean, it just varies. I just believe in making good music is to be what, you know, what actually, you know, to wanting to do music.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, especially, I mean, every artist always, I always ask that question, not necessarily to put anyone in a box, but because I like hearing, especially when you hear like really good artists and, you know, you yourself are a really good hip hop artist in general. So, you know, I always make the joke and it's not really a joke. It's more of a serious comment that anyone that, that Ran tends to bring with them or travel with usually has a caliber above the rest in some capacity. And if Ran has, and that's just because I know Ran's a good judge of character and a good judge of talent. And usually if anyone's coming right with him to anywhere, whether it be Japan, Austin, San Antonio, or otherwise, I assume they're already good just by the nature of who they're with and who,
right,
who
exactly
that guy tends to have his company with. So I was like, I was like, okay, I'm certain this guy's going to be good. There's no other, you know, there's only reason why he'd be here. Because if he wasn't, Rand wouldn't have said, hey, come with me to Japan. You know, that wouldn't have come up in any conversation just by the nature of things.
Exactly. Especially to travel across the world with, you know.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, and so I already know that, but because I know that artists tend to have all these influences, I'm like always curious, like, you know, what are those? Because again, we all sort of take from something. And hearing it from your family is even more touching, especially your uncle, just the idea of that he was your not just your nexus into music in terms of like here's what music you can perform in and that kind of be that sort of thing, but even your nexus into like here are some artists, you know, like you said, mentioned Prince, we mentioned like Rick James kind of came into this and just sort of that kicked you off in a certain direction. And then you kind of still ventured on your own, you know, obviously you mentioned classic rock and all the kind of other genres. We all have those. But I always find it fascinating to see where that kind of comes in.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and it's like, you know, so just hearing, you know, like I spoke, I actually, when we went and saw him perform, they perform at, here, like they have a little weekly. I had actually went and saw him and perform. And I want to say this was like, you know, like before thing, you know, my Facebook, like he's on my friends list and everything. So he knew what was going on. He knew I was going, but I just hadn't, you know, I hadn't done yet. So just to, you know, when I was, and just hearing him tell me how proud he was, it was just real touching. It was like, it just like more like fuel for the motivation that I needed, you know? So it felt real good.
Hey, Miranda, could you do me a favor and turn off your video just because like it is kind of breaking up a bit and it's sort of breaking up at those like weird moments that. Well, I want to try to do one quick troubleshoot. Just turn off your camera really quick. It should be like up above there where you see like microphone, invite people. You should see like turn camera off. Sometimes that increases the vocal clarity. It's just you're breaking up at those really key moments. We're going to try this, people.
Okay.
That's all. You know, sometimes it helps the codec out a bit. And I was just like,
oh,
like,
yeah.
It was like a break. It was like breaking right at those like. Like I was working around it and I was just like, there are these really awesome gems being dropped. And I'm just like, fuck.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, but it was just, you know, to wrap that part up. I mean, it was awesome to hear him tell me what I'm doing and the fact that just, you know, him knowing how far I've come to there, because I mean, if you think about it, he literally was like the start, you know, at least he was the help to the starting point of my career.
Yeah.
It felt great. It meant a lot to hear him, you know, to hear him. I mean, so that was like the fuel that I needed, you know, for the proper motivation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And such. So yeah, let's move on. This could be, even though, you know, technically you're hip hop and you know, even hip hop is nerdcore and everything else like that. No matter what, I always believe everyone's a geek. And obviously, you know, you yourself, when we went to Odaiba, it wasn't like you were like, oh, what's this giant robot thing? You're just like, look, it's a fucking, you know, life-size Gundam. Right. God's sake.
I mean, I used to be more of a gamer when I was younger. I mean, I to be honest with you, I mean, I haven't throughout the years. I mean, here and there, you know, I'll play, you know, I'll get down, but you know, it's just not as much as I was, you know, when I was a kid. So,
well, what was your kind of geek inspiration, if any? And I only say that because, again, the way I view life and to make it very simple, we're all geeks of something. You know, if you if you talk to anybody that's like really into like rock music, and that's like, I'm not a geek. I'm not geeky at all. And you say, all right, well, cool. Hey, what are all those things you use your feet in? Oh, you mean my pedals? Yeah. Like, why do you have so many? Oh, let me tell you about my audio chain. And they start talking about all these things that do different effects, that bend the electricity a certain way, that do all these kind of stuff. I go, you just geeked out on pedals right in front of me. And it's like, oh, that's a geek. Like, yes, we all have those. We all have that. What is your kind of geekiest inspiration type thing?
Gosh, that's like a question, because it's like, you know, just geeking out on like just damn near anything, especially, but as a kid, I mean, just growing up, you know, music knowledge, you know, was something that, you know, you can not as well. Any, you can geek out on anything as long as you have like infatuated with it. You know, it's something that's just like, you're just tired. It's something that you're very knowledgeable about. That's gone forever. But playing games as a kid, you know, I mean, it's just, well, I mean, that's why when we went to, oh God, what was it?
Oh yeah, you guys went to Super Potato after the fact. Like I had gone earlier that week, but you guys had gone all together to Super Potato.
Yeah, it was so awesome, you know, like going over there and, you know, just getting a chance to see, you know, because of the fact that it's like, it's not even necessarily a retro store because it's like homemade. So, you know, you're going there and you're getting a chance to like arcades that we were seeing in there. Like it was bringing up so many great, like nostalgic memories for me, you know, being able to actually like, you know, and just take it all in, you know. It's like, oh man, you know, like, I mean, I was always into a lot of the fighting games, you know, and of course all the Marios, just being able to see like Final Fight and, you know, and just kind of zone out there. Like it brought me back to this is when I was like a hardcore gamer, you know, and it just kind of, you know, those are, I mean, they can tend to make you who you are later on in life as well. You know, as you become an adult, look at Ran. I mean, he's career now. I mean,
look at me, for Lord's sakes. No, because like when I went to Super Potato, because I'd went the I think I had went either that Friday. No, it was, I went that day before you guys had gotten something. Somehow I'd went there myself, because I got there Friday. It had to be Thursday. Thursday is when I went to Akihabara, like in the morning we went there. That's why we ended up meeting up later that evening. And I went to Super Potato. Like I knew what I was going to buy when I was there, because there's certain games, and like, if ever I see them, you know, in their Japanese form, I have to purchase them because they're part of me, who I am now. And it was games like, you know, I bought a Famicom. I have, you know, all the Mother series games, or they're kind of the Earthbound here in the States, or a game series that affected me very deeply, that are almost a defining character of me, you know, defining characteristic of me, to the point where it's like any of the articles that are jokingly written about me, it's like, he's a very big fan of the Mother series, you know, that kind of thing. So I had to purchase all those. Yeah. I had to purchase all those cartridges there. But even just seeing, you know, you walk around that store and it's a weird thing. Because like the way, for those who, you know, are kind of obviously have never been to Japan, it's actually a chain. It's a chain of video game stores. A lot of them are used. Some of them are not. But a lot of them are used properties. And typically, at a used game store, you see a lot of, you know, retro video game stuff. But the way they have it set up there at Akihabara is, it's this multi-floored thing. And like each floor is like an era of gaming.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like it just was like it was just like a never, you know, like a everlasting situation. I mean, and it's so cool because, I mean, because out there, you know, as far as like architecture, like they build up, they don't build. So therefore you're going to have, you know, different floors. I mean, for God's sake, we saw a Tower Records, 8 floors, I believe.
Yeah. There were like eight floors of Tower Records. And I think one of them was like dedicated to a cafe or something. It was a nightmare because it became this sort of I remember we're at Tower Records, we got confused, like, oh, wait, that's right, the down elevator's on the other side. Like, we got, like, so, you know, discombobulated in that store, just, like, walking around trying to find stuff. But Super Nintendo's, like, so you go, like, the first floor is like, Nintendo, Super Nintendo, like, your era, remember this? Yay! The next floor is, like, N64, right. PlayStation, Dreamcast. And I think there's, like, one other floor that has, like, more modern games. But the top floor, I think, was a cooler one, because that's where they had, like, the arcade. And I was there.
Yeah,
I think they still had it. Like they had I think it was Splatter. I think it was Splatterhouse, the arcade game.
Splatterhouse. Yeah,
it's an old TurboGrafx-16 game. There's also a Genesis version too, but most people remember the TurboGrafx-16 version. You know, and the game itself is like it's so funny looking back at some of those games, especially that one, and realize that this was marketed, you know, without an M rating or anything like that. It's literally just a guy like with the. It basically is you're playing. What was it? Is it? I always forget which one had the hockey mask. That was Jason, but I forget what movie. Whether it's Halloween or Friday 13th.
Friday 13th.
Okay, I always forget. I'm terrible at that. Because Nightmare. That's right. They all tend to blur to me. But yeah, basically it's Friday 13th, the video game, because you're literally like this guy with this fucking hockey mask and a chainsaw, and you're just like saving the world somehow. It's like okay, I guess this is Asian. It was just such. It's such a weird. You know, but also like what's funny, and because we had gotten there when we went to Akihabara, we'd actually bumped into some Americans who were also looking for the store. We all kind of hung out together and sort of found it together, which is awesome. They were amazed that and specifically at that top floor, they also sell like candies and treats. They were amazed that they sell like candy cigarettes in Japan. You know, like we don't really sell candy cigarettes anymore here for, you know, various reasons. So we're almost out of time. We're pretty much at the hour mark here. But before we kind of go into it, I kind of want to start talking about your new stuff, because you actually have a new project coming up pretty soon.
Yes. I mean, it's I was hoping to have it, you know, at the end of 2016. But it's looking like we're more so just because of the promotion wise. Like I try to 90-day push before releasing any kind of project.
That's
and that way, you know, it just has to be done properly. And so if anything, I think it's going to be the top 2017. And the name of the project is Dave's World. Entirely by a producer out of Ghana who goes by the name of 3Q Beats.
Wow. That's I'm now curious how a man from Phoenix meets a producer from Ghana.
It's a very interesting story. So one of my videos on a blog site. On the blog site, I had my contact information on there. My SoundCloud page was one of them. Clicks on there, he goes to the SoundCloud page, music and everything, because he enjoyed the video. So he's like, now I got to hear more. Goes to the SoundCloud, listens to practically all of the records, the songs that were on there. Page, I had my contact info also, and I had my Facebook page. The Facebook page, and I'll never forget this because it hit me up all the time, you know, you know, I had never had anybody approach me the way he did. Very intriguing because message from him, a direct message, and it said, "I am in desired need to work with you."
I'm sorry if I'm laughing, but I'm only laughing just because of
you know, like
I don't speak English. I don't speak English well, but this is what the translator kicked out. Wow, that's. If there's ever a message, and not in a bad way, not to this, you know, not to any insult to this producer, because you know he's working on an album with you and he's got to be awesome because of such, but like, do the spam filters kick in the minute you read something like that?
I mean, yeah.
I don't mean it that way, but I'm just like, when you read like something like, I am in desired need to work with you, it's like, wow, this is a really good spam email, I guess.
Exactly, right? Like, okay, so like, you know, like me clicking on this link is just gonna like, you know, blow up my laptop. Yeah,
basically, that's basically this is like, click here for awesome beats and Viagra and other penis enlargement. Just like, well, let's roll the dice. Click.
Exactly, right? That's exactly what happened. So I was like, you know what? Let me a shot, man. Like something tells me he's. So I went to his page and I was just like, away. I was like, wow, this is some incredible. So I wanted to do one song with him. We did one. It was a record called Do You Still? And it got received. The reception was extremely positive, great feedback. And I just said, the hell with one, man. Like, we should do a project. This is actually our third collaborative effort.
Oh, wow.
Others that we've done prior to this.
That's kind of cool.
So this is the third one.
That's really cool. Sorry, continue.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, I mean, that's far as, you know, how we came about and to where we're at now with it.
It's interesting to get there because, like, I'm, you know, because even though, like I always find it fascinating just how everyone sort of meets in this musical culture, especially now, you know, like now we're in sort of an era where, like, and I remember you'd mentioned on sort of Facebook as sort of a stray comment, you know, like during the early days of music, you know, we're talking earlier this interview, just like going to Tower Records, buying Music Net there, and just thinking like now, I mean, if you were to ask yourself the question, let's say 5 years ago, would you be working on a project with a guy from Ghana?
Like, no, absolutely not.
You know, like that wouldn't factor into anyone's brain.
Right.
Whereas now it's just like, not only are you working on one now, but you've worked on some prior. And after hearing one, you're like, let's just do a damn album. And that was like a decision that, you know, in any era of time, otherwise probably would never have happened, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, how often are you going to come across an album from another country like that? And that's why, I mean, the internet is just a beautiful thing.
Yeah. No, it is. And that's, you know, and I think that's what, you know, and this will be like the last talks. We're pretty much out of time, but it was like that was like the running thing for me in Japan and hearing you and Doug and Rand performing. Like, I didn't get a chance to talk about that. I talked about this, you know, I didn't get a chance about talking on the air. I talked about it after the fact, but during the show there in at Square Sounds Tokyo, you had asked me to you know, to do some photographs, specifically one of you and all the group in the audience. And it was the first time I had been on that side of the stage. Like, I, you know, I've done interviews, I've talked to artists who have been on that stage, I've sung along, I've done all the call responses, and even the night, you know, two nights before, I was, you know, singing Nani at the top of my lungs when Rand said to say what in Japanese, because fuck it, who cares? I'm silly American, and if I could be silly American anywhere, I'll be silly American at a fucking Mega Rand show. But I'd never been behind that side of the stage. I'd never been, you know, watching that from that point of view. And it was surreal to see you all perform there and to see this audience, like, just be excited. Like, I said this in text, but, like, I saw I saw two girls who had bought like the last Megaran album, the LP he brought, the RNDM LP, the one I literally had purchased at the beginning of the show, because, like, well, if Rand doesn't sell one, at least he's, you know, if he doesn't sell anything else, he at least sold one as a joke. And then seeing people buy everything, just like, Rand, you can sell this back. Just give me another one when you get a chance. And just seeing literally like this girl, she was looking at her friend, showed the album, and she's literally jumping. She's like hopping up and down like this excited fangirl, and it was just so surreal to see all these things. And again, to be up on stage with you guys taking a picture and sort of seeing what that viewpoint
looked like. Yeah, I thought that was awesome.
Well, thank you. Yeah, but it was such a weird thing to see that and to see it from that viewpoint, because it was, you know, it's one thing to see people perform and to have this sort of artist up there. It's another thing for me to see my friends perform and to see people who, you know, not days before, but I was just, you know, where we just met and we were in Tower Records together seeing something, you know, we're just hanging out. And now it's you know, on stage, and it's not like it's a small crowd. I mean, it's not the biggest, like a stadium crowd per se, but it's not a small crowd either. You know, it's just a sea of people, if you will. And they're all here, and they're all here to watch you perform, and they're all excited to see you perform. And it's surreal to see that. And I can imagine from your point of view, just seeing that there at that moment was just something, you know, to behold and beheld.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's something that'll, you know, that'll definitely stay in the, that's something that's definitely for the books.
Well, cause I had never seen the show from that point of view, because again, I'm in the audience and I'm the one doing the, you know, Splash Woman thing and screaming. Yeah. And doing call responses, no matter who's performing. It's not an unknown for me to be there, but it was just such a strange thing to see it from your guy's perspective. You know, you who was on stage as the lights are blaring, as you're sort of seeing this audience, you know, just you know, singing call responses, doing this stuff. I was like, wow, okay, I understand why you all do this. I know I can never do this in terms of that kind of performance, that music. I don't have that desire, but I understand what energy.
I mean, but that made me feel good. But you were able to have that moment as well. You know what I mean? That was something I felt really great about. I was like, wow, this is awesome. You know, like Rob got to be up here and, you know, like this, everything worked out.
Yeah, no, it was definitely, again, it was a very, because there's a shot that one of our new friends in Japan took, and she posted on Facebook. I think you shared it as well. And it's like a wide shot from literally where the green room was at the event, something high. I forget what the pretext is, but like literally there's like the if you look at the stage, there's this one.
Yeah.
The green room's like above there. And she took the shot from there. And it's weird seeing me in the shot, you know, on stage. Like, it was just weird for me to see that shot and go like, oh, that's me on stage. That's not,
exactly.
I'm not, you know, one of these things is not like the other. And I jokingly say that because just like, it's so weird. Cause usually I'm in the other side. I'm the one who's like, yeah. And me sitting there just like, this is surreal. And even I know
you
this
almost
is surreal.
You almost look like the DJ.
Yeah. It was bizarre. It was bizarre seeing it after the fact and seeing it then and now. Cause again, being in that, like it was hard for me not to sing along because I'm so used to being, you know, call responses. I'm so goddamn trained to be like, you know, when I say freeze, you know, freestyle, any of those things, I'm so used to it. And like, no, I have to keep silent. I can't do the wave. I can't raise my hand up and scream A at the top. Hey, at the top of my lungs. I can't,
right.
I I'll be picked up by the mic. This is not what camera guy does. You know, you never hear the during like the concert tours, the stagehand singing along. That just doesn't work that way. And it was just such a weird thing to be there at that show in that position, because I was not expecting that. When you asked me like to do that, I was like, yeah, I'll take a picture, thinking that's all I'm going to do is just take a picture. And then Rand's like, well, do you want to record some video for me? I'm like, sure. What else am I going to do? I'm already have a camera up here.
Yeah.
Like, fuck it. Well, I'm already up there. Why not? And just like, I became the weird camera guy of like, well, let me try to get some shots. Let me try to do something here. Let me figure this out.
Yeah.
Because like, hey, it was a very surreal night and it was a very surreal time, and it was a pleasure to have that be with you guys, because it was fun to be among friends, some new, some old and existing, but it was cool to have that moment. And again, also for you guys to be responsive, my friend Claudia, who came with me, who wasn't, you know, who didn't know what she was getting into, and you guys We're just as friendly, if not, and you're, we're all now Facebook friends, and you know, at one point you made a joke of like, if the election goes a certain way, you're all moving to Japan, and Claudia's like, I'm down for making the Mexican restaurant happen, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you know, it was such a fun thing to see, to be a part of, and I'm so glad that you got to do that and got to not only just, you know, I mean, again, you've performed before, so it wasn't anything new performing, but performing in Japan was something that you'd wanted to do for a while. And then, you know, to top it all off, we find your record in Tower Records. And to see a friend, you know, as weird as it sounds, even though, you know, to see a friend of mine, you know, new or old, doesn't matter, to see them get to a point where it's just like this is paralyzing joy, as you worded it. Definitely something I was really happy to be a part of. And out of all of the things that happened in Japan, and there's a lot that happened in Japan that I loved and adored, that was one of my highlights, which is seeing you just have that emotion and to be able to be there, you know, as you're literally buying your album from a Tower Records, as you see your name on, you know, we made the joke of like, it's not like you're under the M's. It's like, no, it says Mr. Miranda, with the idea being,
yeah,
you know, that there are more that can fit under it. You know, you have an end placard somewhere. You have an end tape, an end label. You have with the idea of like, well, there can be another CD back there. Why not two? Why not three? You know, how about four? And
if it's not, and
to know that it's not this pipe dream anymore. Like that was awesome to see that happen.
Absolutely.
Mr. Miranda, always a pleasure to have you finally on as a solo interview. If people want to hear more of your music, if people want to experience everything, where can they go?
Oh man, you can get at me on my Facebook page. I'm Mr. Miranda on Facebook. I have everything on my SoundCloud right now, just soundcloud.com/Mr. Miranda. Under construction.com, we will have shortly, and that will have everything there. Just anything. I mean, just iTunes, Spotify. I mean, you name it. Just search it, and it's there. So
yeah, just look up Mr. Miranda. He's got Bandcamp, iTunes, his own website. Everything he's done is amazing. And like I said before, he may be a friend, but that was the first time I think at least I can remember seeing him perform. And if you're into any kind of hip hop, he's definitely someone to hear. And an amazing human being, an amazing person. Of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent404 there on Twitter. If you want to catch previous episodes of the podcast, you can head to our website, cosmicradio.tv/8bitlife. There you'll find links in the show notes, our Twitter account, which is at 8bitlifepodcast, and of course, everything else on this network. And if you have a little bit of money after buying all the Miranda stuff and throwing more money towards all the projects, you head to patreon.com/8bitlife and help this podcast become bigger, better, and more awesome. That's it for today. Until next time, I'll talk to another geek about something completely and utterly random. Bye, people. This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.